Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Greetings again. This is Bob Mallon, and this edition of Military News from our favorite website, militarynews.com. Let's get started. First article from militarynews.com, how the Army made a deal with UFL football and The Rock, despite doubts over the sponsorship's worth. Posted military.com, Philadelphia, April 12, 2024. By Steve Bainon. The enemy linked a significant sponsorship deal with the little-known United Football League, or UFL, the upstart minor league alternative to the NFL, after internal reviews on the idea found the investment would be unlikely to yield new recruits in a meaningful way, according to documents obtained by military.com. The roughly $11 million deal set the service up to be the premier partner for the league's inaugural season, which started last month, and created a relationship between the Army and Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson, an owner of the league, global celebrity and top-tier online influencer. The deal was more than a year in the making, and planning started before the league was formed by the merger of two other minor league football leagues, the XFL and the USFL. The Army pitch originally started as a $25 million sponsorship with the XFL in February 2023, despite the reduced costs of the UFL sponsorship. Service partners behind the scenes spent much of the past year warning that the advertising bang for the buck simply wasn't there. Documents show this. Internal data reviewed by military.com found that the Army estimated the UFL sponsorship deal would net only between 160 and 891 new recruits. The football sponsorship, unveiled for the first time this week in the Wall Street Journal, comes as the Army has struggled to find its footing in an evolving media space and pitch service to Gen Z. The difficulties have been highlighted by years of missed recruiting goals. The service isn't allowed to advertise on TikTok, where young Americans consume much of their media, while the Army has boosted investments in Instagram and streaming platforms, it's still heavily invested in traditional cable advertising. Documents show that from the beginning, Army marketing officials and other staff in the service were skeptical of the partnership with the UFL. Much of the concern was raised as the Army was mulling a partnership over the past year with other minor league football leagues, such as the XFL and the USFL, which went on to form the UFL. But the bottom line remains much the same. Investments in minor league sports are risky, given relatively poor viewership, and professional athletes is generally losing relevance with Gen Z, the prime demographic for Army recruiting. Some Army staff warned that a multi-million dollar deal with minor league football would run an enormous risk of being wasted, with some service marketing officials telling military.com it appeared to echo other major sporting event blunders, including the National Guard's ill-fated spending on a NASCAR sponsorship that didn't appear to yield any recruits. Recently, retired Major General Alex Fink the chief of the Army's marketing arm at the time, warned in March 2023 that the XFL had little meaningful presence online and relatively low social media engagement, according to a memo obtained by military.com. These posts do not demonstrate interest or excitement from our prospect audience or influencers, Fink noted in the memo. Less than 1,500 posts fall within the 18 to 20 to 35 age range. Ignacio Marvridis, the deputy chief for Army marketing, warned in August that XFL ratings were underperforming and that he didn't anticipate much increase in interest down the road, according to an internal memo. He said money being spent there would be redundant, given the Army's more careful ad placement in the NFL and other higher-profile sporting events. The XFL provides minimal unique marketing coverage not already supported by the Army's current media plan, Marvridis said in the memo. He recommended the Army not pursue any major relationship with that league. Limit any partnership activities with the XFL to the local level, he noted, meaning it should just be an environment in which recruiters are present to talk to attendees. But the UFL deal was finalized after a push from General Randy George, the Army Chief of Staff, despite the officials around him warning against the idea. Sources familiar with the situation told that to military.com. Military.com reviewed numerous internal service documents and email correspondence between staff and senior Army leadership also. Colonel Dave Butler, Georgia's spokesperson, said Army marketing officials eventually signed off on the idea and recommended pursuing the deal with the UFL. But when asked for evidence confirming the shift, Butler declined to show any documentation to military.com. The deal includes the Army logo being displayed prominently on the jerseys of players on each of the eight teams, a logo on the field, and other key branding during the game, including replays and social media posts. The goal with this and any of our partnerships is to bring about a lasting change in how the Army is perceived by the American public, Laura DeFrancisco, a spokesman for the Army Enterprise Marketing Office, or AEMO, said in a statement. We want to show America that the Army is a great place to find your purpose and become the best version of yourself. Perhaps, just as importantly, the service said, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, as owner of the league, as a pseudo-brand ambassador for the service, was a good idea. Johnson is among the world's most popular celebrities. He has broad general appeal and generally doesn't participate in propping up brands in which he doesn't have a financial stake. But his star power also causes concerns among some Army officials who worried it was influencing the service's take on the sponsorship. This stunk of old ways of thinking, and the Army just wasn't wanting to get The Rock in the room and get him in an Army shirt once in a while. One service official with direct knowledge of the deal said, I think some people in charge got starstruck, and because of that, we blew millions. It's unclear how often Johnson is expected to have sponsored posts showcasing the Army and on his personal channel, such as Instagram, or where much of his value as a partner would likely come from. Instead, the deal is specific to the UFL and Army logo placements, which may come with occasional support from Johnson. We believe in this league. I think we're going to see great football, Johnson said on Fox Sports in February. I've gotten to know General George, and we've become pretty good buddies. He's deeply passionate about the recruitment of the Army. However, Johnson's outspokenness was seen as a potential risk by Army planners, including his support of Democratic candidate, particularly President Joe Biden, his open support of Black Lives Matter, and critiques of former President Donald Trump, service documents also showed. The Rock and his massive social media following have value, but have also raised some brand safety risk, an internal Army document on the plan says. Given the idea available, it is uncertain what level of gain to expect from this component, but it would provide the U.S. Army an opportunity to partner with one of the world's biggest influences. Overall, the UFL itself was seen by Army staff, who were interviewed, as the weakest part of the deal, despite being the central purpose on paper. Instead, Johnson was seen as a key media ally. The league was deemed to have low contribution to the service's media goals due to the challenges of gaining popularity from an unknown audience and an unknown league, as well as the poor ratings of previous NFL alternatives. We'll evaluate the partnership over the next year and determine the return on investment and see if this is something we want to do longer term, George wrote in an email to top Army officials, including Army Secretary Christine Wormuth in late March. The deal was finally reached after Army staff agreed that the $11 million would not come from the traditional marketing budget, preventing any notable disruption to other deals and ad buys. Service planners found that it's nearly impossible to project the success of investing in the first year of a professional sports league, but saw the opportunity to score favorably as the first major sponsor, which could lead to longer-term benefits and advantages with future marketing campaigns. During its first week, the UFL had 1.5 million views, but that fell to 844,000 during its second week, a 19% decline in viewership, according to reporting from the Sports Business Journal. Within that, Gen Z viewership might be slim, as that generation has almost completely cut away from traditional television and is far less interested in sports than previous generations. A 2022 poll by Morning Consult found 33% of Gen Zers do not watch live sports, compared to 22% of millennials. Next article from Military.com is headlined, Troubled Boxer, USS Boxer, that is, returns home 10 days into deployment due to maintenance issues. Posted Military.com by Rachel Nostrandt, published April 12, 2024. The maintenance-embattled USS Boxer is heading back to San Diego just 10 days after deployment due to an emerging engineering issue, as first reported by USN News and confirmed to Military.com by Navy officials. Sailing as the big deck or lead ship of its amphibious-ready group, the Boxer had already been deployed by... the Boxer had already been delayed by months when it deployed April 1st. Its return further comes on the heels of an announcement by the Navy's top leader earlier this week that the service is investigating the ship's prolonged maintenance issues. USS Boxer is returning to San Diego to undergo additional maintenance in support of its deployment in the Indo-Pacific region. Lieutenant Commander Jesus Uranga, a spokesman for the Navy's Third Fleet in the Pacific, told Military.com in an email. The Boxer had departed for its Indo-Pacific deployment and was conducting integration exercises with the MV-22 Osprey in the Third Fleet area of operations when it was forced to return, Uranga said. While further details were not provided regarding the nature of the malfunction, Uranga said the ship would return to its deployment in the near future. Marines and aircraft with the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit were on board the Boxer and have already been offloaded, officials told U.S. Navy News, although the ship has not yet made it back to port as of Thursday evening. On April 8th, the Navy's top leader, Admiral Lisa Franchetti, said that she had ordered a deep dive into numerous maintenance and readiness issues faced by the ship. I think there's some good lessons learned with the Boxer, Franchetti told reporters at the Navy's annual Sea Air Space Conference earlier this week. Meanwhile, last month, the Boxer was given 7 Navy-wide awards for sustained superior performance, including the Battle Effectiveness Award and the Marine Warfare Excellence Award, according to the service. Franchetti's inquiry will be led by 3-star admiral in the Navy's operation and plans and policy officers, she said, adding she anticipates they will come to her with initial recommendations on how to proceed in the May timeframe, and that will start to outline the shape of the deep dive going forward. While the investigation's timing may seem coincidental, the 4-star admiral said Monday that the branch was trying to be proactive and keep delays to just the Boxer. We're seeing some potential delays on the amphibious assault ship USS Wasp, Franchetti said. We're trying to look ahead to make sure that we can, I want to say, nip this in the bud. The Wasp, which is the same class of ship as the Boxer, departed Naval Station Norfolk, Virginia in early March, only to return shortly afterwards. A spokesman for Surface Force Atlantic told this to Military.com that following the incident that during the underway, the ship discovered an engineering irregularity and returned to port to effect repairs. The ship got underway again at the end of March without issue. A defense official told Military.com in March that the Boxer had originally been slated to deploy late last year, but it was held up thanks to a series of delays and mechanical issues that were driven, at least partly, by poor leadership aboard the ship. 2 previous command investigations conducted on at least 3 different engineering breakdowns showed a lack of procedural compliance, substandard supervisory oversight, and general complacency by the crew, according to the ship's strike group commander. Those breakdowns, information on which was released to Military.com as part of a Freedom of Information Act request, revealed that the ship had experienced damage to 2 forced draft blowers. On November 8, 2022, a separate investigation into that incident, also provided to Military.com via FOIA request, faulted poor quality craftsmanship, lack of industry repair skill capabilities, and a lack of supervisory oversight from the Navy office overseeing the work. Then, on May 14, the ship had a boiler safety breakdown. That investigation once again revealed the lack of procedural compliance and overall complacency of all personnel involved. Documents from the strike group commander revealed this. Two other ships that the Boxer commands, the USS Somerset and USS Harper's Ferry, both have successfully deployed. The Somerset and its contingent of the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit are currently in the waters off India, according to Marine Corps press release from April 4th. The Somerset deployed in January, and the Harper's Ferry deployed in mid-March. Next comes an article from Military.com. U.S. highlights role helping Israel thwart Iran attack as Biden coordinates G7 command of Tehran and its condemnation. Associated Press, Zeke Miller and Michelle Price. Dateline Washington. The United States on Sunday highlighted its role in helping Israel thwart an unprecedented aerial attack from Iran as President Joe Biden convened leaders of the Group of Seven countries in an effort to prevent a wider regional escalation and coordinate a global rebuke of Tehran. The U.S. assisted Israel in shooting down dozens and dozens of drones and missiles fired by Iran on Saturday in what was the first time it had launched a direct military assault on Israel. Israel authorities said 99% of the inbound weapons were shot down without causing any significant damage. U.S. officials said that despite the high interception rate, Iran was to destroy and cause casualties in its intent, and that if successful, the strike would have caused an uncontrollable escalation across the Mideast. While the U.S. and its allies were preparing for days for such an attack, the launches were at the high end of what was anticipated, according to the officials, who were not authorized to publicly discuss the manner and speak on conditions of anonymity. At one point, at least 100 ballistic missiles from Iran were in the air simultaneously, with just minutes of flight to Israel, the official said. Biden and senior official monitored the firings and interception attempts in real time. In the White House Situation Room were also monitored. The officials said there was relief in the room once they saw that the missile defense efforts had succeeded. A senior U.S. military official said American aircraft shot down more than 70 drones and cruise missiles, while U.S. destroyers in the Eastern Mediterranean downed between 4 and 6 ballistic missiles, and an American Patriot missile battery in Iraq shot down one more. At my direction, to support the defense of Israel, the U.S. military moved aircraft and ballistic missile defense destroyers to the region over the course of the past week, Biden said in a statement late Saturday. Thanks to these deployments and the extraordinary skill of our service members, we helped Israel take down nearly all of the incoming drones and missiles. Biden, and in a call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that night, urged that Israel claim victory for its defense power as the president aimed to dissuade America's closest Mideast ally from a large retaliatory strike against Iran. Biden, according to a second senior administration official, told Netanyahu that the U.S. would not participate in any offensive action against Iran. The official was not authorized to publicly discuss the private conversation and spoke on conditions of anonymity. I told him that Israel demonstrated a remarkable capacity to defend against and defeat even unprecedented attack, sending a clear message to its foes that they cannot effectively threaten the security of Israel, Biden said in his statement. Biden had a call Sunday with Jordan's King Abdullah II, in which the king said that any escalatory measures by Israel would lead to a broader conflict in the region, according to the royal court. There was no immediate White House summary of the call. The president also spoke with some of the U.S. forces involved in shooting down the Iranian drones. After their video conference Sunday, the G7 leaders issued a joint statement unequivocally condemning in the strongest terms the direct attack by Iran while expressing our full solidarity and support to Israel and reaffirming our commitment toward its security. The G7, made up of the U.S., Italy, Japan, Germany, France, Britain, and Canada, also said that Iran, with its sanctions, had further stepped toward the destabilization of the region and risks provoking an uncontrollable regional escalation. They said their nations stand ready to take further measures now and in response to further destabilization initiatives. A senior U.S. administration official said some of the countries discussed listing Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist organization and unlocking further sanctions against Tehran, though no final decisions were made, as usual. The effort to encourage Israel to show restraint mirrored ongoing efforts of Americans to curtail Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza, which is now in its 7th month, and to do more to protect civilian lives in the territory. The war was referenced in the G7 statement, with the leaders saying they will bolster our cooperation to end the crisis in Gaza, including by continuing to work towards an immediate and sustainable ceasefire and the release of hostages by Hamas, and deliver increased humanitarian assistance to Palestinians in need. The U.S. and Israel had been bracing for an attack for days after Iran said it would retaliate for a suspected Israeli strike this month on an Iranian consular building in Syria that killed 12 people, including 2 very senior Iranian generals in the Revolutionary Guard's elite quad's force. Florida said Senator Marco Rubio, the top Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee, criticized White House for leaking to the press that Biden told Netanyahu to take the win and not retaliate. Rubio told CNN State of the Union that it was part of the White House effort to appease people calling for ceasefire in Gaza. Next, we have another article, believe it or not, from military.com. Headline, 55 Coast Guard Academy Cadets Disciplined in Cheating Scandal. Posted by military.com, Patricia Kamey. Published April 12, 2024. Officials at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy say they have disciplined 55 second-class cadets who shared the answers to 2 homework assignments last fall in a nautical science course. An Academy spokesman said on Friday that the cadets distributed answers related to navigation assignments in a required course for graduation in clear violation of Academy policy. The collaboration violated the Coast Guard Academy's honor concept, according to officials. The Coast Guard Academy is committed to upholding the highest standards of integrity, honor, and accountability, Captain Edward Hernandez, Commander of Cadets, said in a statement. Misconduct like this undermines trust, and those found to have violated our principles were held accountable for their actions. Following an investigation, six cadets found to have a significant amount of involvement in the collusion received failing grades, while 48 were given lower grades. 11 were removed from command positions they had earned this coming summer, supporting training of the incoming SWAB class. A total of 55 cadets, including one who was not enrolled in the course, but was involved in the information exchange, were restricted to the Academy grounds and will undergo a 20-week honor remediation program. The Coast Guard Academy, unlike some schools, does not have an honor code, an oath that students take swearing that they will not lie, cheat, or steal, that also contains a non-toleration clause requiring those who become aware of an honor code violation to report it or also be in violation of the code. Instead, the school has an honor concept, which says students' actions must be straightforward and always above reproach, according to the cadet handbook. However, they are required to report activities that do not incriminate themselves, and the condoning of an honor violation is a punishable offense. The Coast Guard Academy's honor concept is exemplified by a person who will neither lie, cheat, steal, nor attempt to deceive. It is epitomized by an individual who places loyalty to duty above loyalty to personal friendship or to selfish desires, the handbook states. The nautical science course the cadets were enrolled in is required for graduation, according to public affairs specialist Second Class Tyler Bacon. The six students receive failing grades for their involvement, all of whom will be first-class cadets next year. They will have time to retake the course, Bacon said in an interview with Military.com on Friday. The Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut, has an enrollment of roughly 1,000 students who are training to become officers in the U.S. Coast Guard after graduation. The last major cheating scandal at the school occurred in 2016, when three students were expelled and 37 others disciplined for cheating on an online quiz for a ship and marine systems class, according to the Associated Press. The Academy has been the subject of service and congressional investigations into its response to sexual assault at the school and failure by top Coast Guard leaders to disclose the results of a six-year investigation into cases of rape, sexual assault, and sexual harassment at the institution that occurred between the early 80s and 2020. And now comes an article headlined, House Speaker Mike Johnson says he will push for aid to Israel and Ukraine this week. Associated Press by Stephen Groves, published April 14, 2024, Dateline, Washington. House Speaker Mike Johnson said Sunday he will try to advance wartime aid for Israel this week as he attempts the difficult task of winning House approval for a national security package that also includes funding for Ukraine and allies in Asia. Johnson, a Republican from Louisiana, is already under immense political pressure from his fellow GE lawmakers as he tries to stretch between the Republican Party's divided support for helping Kiev defend itself from Moscow's invasion. The Republican speaker has sat for 2 months on a $95 billion supplemental package that would send support to the U.S. allies as well as provide humanitarian aid for civilians in Ukraine and Gaza and funding to replenish U.S. weapons provided to Taiwan. The unprecedented attack by Iran on Israel early Sunday further ratcheted up the pressure on Johnson, but also gave him the opportunity to underscore the urgency of approving the funding. Johnson told Fox News Channel's Sunday Morning Future that he and Republicans understood the necessariness of standing with Israel, and he would try this week to advance the aid. The details of that package are being put together right now, he said. We're looking at the options and all those supplemental issues. GOP Representative Mike Turner of Ohio, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, said on NBC's Meet the Press that Johnson has made it clear that he sees a path for funding Israel, Ukraine, and allies in Asia to come to the House floor this week. The speaker has exposed support for legislation that would structure some of the funding for Kiev as loans, pave the way for the U.S. to tap frozen Russian central bank assets, and include other policy changes. Johnson has pushed for the Biden administration to lift a pause on approvals for liquefied natural gas exports, and at times has also demanded policy changes at the U.S. border with Mexico. Lots of luck on that. But currently, the only package with wide bipartisan support in Congress is the Senate-passed bill that includes roughly $60 billion for Ukraine and $14 billion for Israel. White House National Security spokesman John Kirby called on the speaker to put the package on the floor as soon as possible. We don't need any reminders in terms of what's going on in Ukraine, Kirby said on NBC, but last night certainly underscores significantly the threat that Israel faces on a very, very tough neighborhood. As Johnson searches for a way to advance the funding for Ukraine, he has been in conversation with both the White House and former President Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. With his job under threat, Johnson traveled to Florida on Friday for an event with Trump at his Mar-a-Lago club. Trump expressed support for Johnson and said he had a very good relationship with him. He and I are 100% united on these big agenda items, Johnson said. When you talk about aid to Ukraine, he's introduced the loan lease concept, which is really important one and I think has a lot of consensus. But Trump, with his America First agenda, has inspired many Republicans to push for a more isolationist stance. Support for Ukraine has steadily eroded in the roughly 2 years since the war began, and a cause that once enjoyed wide support has become one of Johnson's toughest problems. When he returns to Washington on Monday, Johnson also will be facing a contingent of conservatives already angry with how he has led the House in maintaining much of the status quo, both on government spending and, more recently, a U.S. government surveillance tool. Now, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a right-wing Republican from Georgia, has called for Johnson's ouster. She departed the Capitol on Friday, telling reporters that support for her effort was growing. While no other Republicans have openly joined Green, a growing number of hardline conservatives are openly disparaging Johnson and defying his leadership. Meanwhile, senior GOP lawmakers who support aid to Ukraine are growing frustrated with the months-long waiting, bringing it to the House floor for a vote. Kiev's troops have been running low on ammunition, and Russia is becoming emboldened as it looks to gain ground in a spring and summer offensive. A massive missile and drone attack destroyed one of Ukraine's largest power plants and damaged others last week. Russia is beginning to gain ground. Ukraine is beginning to lose the ability to defend itself, Turner said. The United States must step up and provide Ukraine with weapons that they need. The divided dynamic has forced Johnson to try to stitch together a package that has some policy wins for Republicans while also keeping Democrats on board. Democrats, however, have repeatedly called on the Speaker to put the $95 billion package by the Senate in February on the floor. Although progressive Democrats have resisted supporting the aid to Israel over concerns it would support its campaign into Gaza that has killed thousands of civilians, most Democrats have gotten behind supporting the second passage, that is, the Senate package. The reason why the Senate bill is the only bill is because of the urgency, Representative Gregory Meeks, the top Democrat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, said last week. We pass the Senate bill, it goes straight to the president's desk, and you start getting the aid to Ukraine immediately. That's the only option. Many Democrats also have signaled they would likely be willing to help Johnson defeat an effort to remove him from the Speaker's office if he puts the Senate bill on the floor. I'm one of those who would save him if we can do Israel, Taiwan, Ukraine, and some responsible border security, said Representative Henry Cuellar, a Texas Democrat. Here we have, from military.com, a headline, Sexual Assault Charges Dropped Against Camp Pendleton Marine Found with Teen in Barracks Last Year. Published military.com, Drew F. Lawrence, on April 11, 2024. The Marine Corps on Tuesday dropped sexual assault charges against a Marine who was found with a minor in his barracks room last year, according to the service. The Marine instead pleaded guilty to leaving the base without authorization. Last year, PFC Avery Rosario was found with a 14-year-old girl in his barracks room and subsequently charged with three counts of sexual assault. The charges alleged that Rosario sexually assaulted girl on Camp Pendleton, California, where he is stationed. The Marine Corps dropped those charges ahead of the Marine's impending court-martial, instead opting for a plea deal that resulted in Rosario being sentenced to time served, the breach of restriction charge, and an agreement that he be administratively separated from the service. In the hearing Tuesday, Rosario admitted to violating liberty restrictions to meet the teenager, whom his defense attorney said he believed was older because she represented herself as 21 years old on a dating app. The charges that have been dismissed involve allegations that Rosario sexually assaulted a minor. A spokesman for Marine Expeditionary Force which is located at Camp Pendleton, told military.com on Wednesday. The convening authority came to this decision after consulting with the minor and her family through the minor's attorney. Military.com attempted to reach a family member of the minor via email, but did not hear back by publication. NBC7 reported that the teenager's family did not wish to make a statement following the guilty plea and dropped the charges. The teenager was reported missing to the San Diego County Sheriff's Department by her grandmother in mid-June. Roughly 2 weeks later, she was discovered in Rosario's barracks, and military police at Camp Pendleton arrested him. He admitted to having sexual contact with the minor when questioned by authorities. According to Naval Criminal Investigative Service documents that were reviewed by military.com. In August, the Marine Corps announced formal charges against Rosario that included sexual assault of a minor. Military.com contacted Rosario's attorney, Jocelyn Stewart, who said that Rosario should have been cleared of all charges earlier. The government was in possession of exculpatory evidence that they sat on for many months, she said, specifying the said evidence alleged the minor misrepresented her age on dating apps. The military represented that if a person has a personal belief that someone is of lawful age to consent and or under the undergoing circumstances, that belief is reasonable, that's unknown as a complete defense, which makes him not guilty, she said. The minor's aunt has said via social media that the minor was a victim of human trafficking and a military cover-up. Preliminary NCIS documents reviewed originally by military.com found no evidence of human trafficking. Stewart was critical of the Marine Corps both over the phone and in a blog post on her law firm's site, saying that the service cannot be entrusted to hold its counsel responsible. As for the rest of them, the girl, her family, and specifically the aunt, whose fame-seeking videos caught the attention of other content creators and whose creators for perpetuating myths, lies, and slander. Your day of reckoning is coming, Stewart said in a blog post, confirming to military.com over the phone that she is considering civil remedies after the charges were dropped. I'll see to it, she wrote. Let's end here with an article from military.com that is actually upbeat. Universal pre-K starting at most Defense Department schools after Congress approves funding. Posted military.com, Kelsey Baker, published April 12, 2024. For the first time ever, military schools have begun enrolling students for a new full-day universal pre-kindergarten program. The new Department of Defense Education Activity Pre-K program is set to start at the beginning of the next school year with enrollment which has long been sought by military families, especially those with two working parents, including dual military couples. Now 80 of 90 DODEA schools will host the universal program with enrollment open for school starting this fall. It really adds a lot more into the support we can provide to military families, Will Griffin, the communications director of DODEA, told military.com in an interview Thursday. Pre-K is already offered at some DOD schools, but not everywhere. In many cases, when it is offered, the program allows only half-day enrollment, leaving many working parents to come up with alternate childcare solutions. The initiative, fueled by a $94 million in a defense spending bill passed Congress last month, it's open to all children eligible to attend DODEA schools who will be 4 years old by September 1. It will follow the widely used early childhood development creative curriculum. The program is set to open after undergoing a successful pilot program last year at an elementary school at Marine Corps Air Station Wakuna, Japan, Griffin said. The 10 schools that will not offer universal pre-K are in the process of undergoing significant renovations or new construction to accommodate future students, Griffin said, adding that a DoD school must adhere to certain facility requirements for hosting elementary school students. Those kids include 4 elementary schools at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, 1 at Fort Novercell, Alabama, and 5 additional schools across Europe, including 4 in Germany and 1 in Kaliningrad, Belgium. The schools that will offer universal pre-K will begin the programs 10 days after start of the regular school year for older students. Griffin said the delayed start will allow additional time for pre-K teacher professional development and will let teachers and families schedule one-on-one meetings to help children ease into the change. The DODEA expects numbers of pre-K enrollment to closely match kindergarten enrollment, which currently hovers around 6,000 students, Griffin said, adding that the bulk of military students are youngsters enrolling in pre-K through fifth grade. DODEA is working to add 500 jobs to support the program, including 250 teachers and 250 teaching aides. The student-to-teaching ratio for the program is set at 18 students for every 1 teacher with a teaching aide. Teaching aides are paraprofessionals and are not required to have a teaching degree or license. Roughly 80% of new pre-K staff have been hired so far, Griffin said. Details on the delayed school openings and student registrations can be found on the DODEA website. Registration is opened and will not close through early enrollment is encouraged. Make that though early enrollment is encouraged. Well, that's going to be about it for this edition of Military News. Again, this is Bob Mallon, thanking you for joining me. Come again next time, and we'll talk some more.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.